And we're holding on page 72 in Yoma, about four or five lines from the bottom of the page, middle of Osayin Bays. We started learning yesterday about various kinds of cases where a person's life is in danger, and you can be Mechal Shabbos or Mechal most other mitzvahs in order to save their life. We'll talk about soon, Be'ezus Hashem, a number of Tanoim and Amoraim deal with the basis for that, where exactly we learn that concept. Anyway, the last one we had was a case where Rabbi Yochanan was suffering from a disease called Tzafdina. We talked about yesterday, Tzafdina is often identified as scurvy. Whatever the case, the Gemara is going to point out soon, it can be dangerous. So we said he went to a Goyish lady who was known to have a cure for it and used to make a lot of money for it, and he worms the secret out of her and publicizes it. So the Gemara says, "My Abdalay, what exactly was this cure that she gave him?" Omer of Acha, Breder of Asi, Breder Ami, Meisor, she used water that sourdough had been soaked in, the shemen zayis and olive oil, umelach and salt. So she mixed that concoction together and she gave it to him. So that's what we learned yesterday, that Rabbi Yochanan had she did it for him Thursday and Friday. Then he said, "What if I need it on Shabbos?" She says, "You won't need it. What if I do? And I won't be able to come because I'm busy teaching my Talmidim." So he wormed the secret out of her. So now Rabbi Acha Breder Rabbi Ami is saying this is the concoction that she used. If indeed Tzafdina is scurvy, then the shemen zayis contains vitamin C. So then that would be the active ingredient in it. Rabbi Yema says you don't use water in which sourdough has been soaked. Sa'ur gufe, use the sourdough itself, shemen zayis and melach mixed together with olive oil and salt. Rav Ashi Yama mishcha de gad for de avza. Rav Ashi says you use the oil from the use oil from a feather of a goose. So Rashi points out that the wing of a goose has a little bone on the end of it. So you take the fat from inside that bone and you use that and apply it to the teeth or the area that's suffering from this disease. Page 72 at the bottom. So we're saying, so Rav Ashi is saying, Mishcha de Gabza de Abza. So Rashi explains there's a little bone at the tip of a goose's wing, and that bone contains fat, or maybe surrounding it. Rashi says, Shuman Moyach Etzem Kotten, the fat of the marrow of the small bones. So you have a small bone over there at the end of the wing. You have inside the bone, like most bones, there's marrow, and in that marrow you have fat. So that fat, then you use that, you apply that to that area. Omer Abaye, but Abaye says, "I'm not abdus l'kula v'loy tisoy. I one time was suffering from the Tzafdina disease, and I tried all these three possibilities that we said so far, v'loy tisoy, and I wasn't cured, abdu omer Yahu tayo, until an Arab merchant told me the following remedy. I see kashyosa dezeisa v'loy molo tilta, take kernels from, take pits from olives that are not yet one third ripe, the kalinu benura, burn those olive pits in fire amorachadta on top of a new spade." So you take a new metal shovel or spade. You make a fire on that. And you burn the kernels in that. And then take the ashes that result from that. The abdik the koche de dore, and then apply that. Stick it to the whole row of teeth where you're suffering that ailment. Abu hochi. So Abaye says, "I did that. The itasoi, and sure enough, I was cured." So we have four different. You take the pits of the olives, you burn them. Amorachadza means on top of a new spade. Pashtus, the point is, in other words, you want that there shouldn't be anything else mixed in. If you make the fire on the ground or on a used keli or whatever, then you're gonna get some bits of the keli in there as well. You want the pure ashes from the olive pits. So and then you take that and you apply it to the row of teeth. So Abaye says, for me, that works. So we have four different possibilities. Mimai havi, what does a person get Tzafdina from in the first place? Michamimi chamimi dechiti, when a person eats very, very hot wheat bread, or mishiura kosa de harasina, or where he eats leftover kosa de harasina. Kosa Dehausener is a dish mentioned in many places in Shas. We've come across it before in En Yaakov. It was fish fried. It was fish fried with their own fat with together with flour. So it was kind of like their equivalent of gefilte fish, sort of. Or maybe like the equivalent of breaded fish or something. Whatever the case, when it's left over, then the Gemara is saying it's not good for you, and if you eat, and if a person eats it, then he might get the Safdina disease. Umay simone, what is the major symptom of it? Rami midi bekoche, if a person puts something between his teeth, but also dummy midi dori, and blood starts coming out from the gums. So on the face of it, it could mean some kind of gum inflammation. But again, as we talked about yesterday, a number of Meforshim and more modern Sfarim and whatever think that it means scurvy, which is nowadays it's known to be because of a lack of vitamin C. And in fact, in modern Hebrew, they use the word safdina to mean just that. One of the early symptoms of that, one of the first symptoms of scurvy is taka, that a person bleeds from his gums and from various other parts of his body. So whether it's scurvy or whether it's some kind of gum inflammation or whatever, anyway. So Rabbi Yochanan, when he was suffering from tzafdina, Ovad Hochi b'Shabsa, he did this remedy on Shabbos, the itzi, and he was cured. So the question is, Rabbi Yochanan Hechi Ovid Hochi, how could Rabbi Yochanan do that? Now, Rashi says that actually we shouldn't have that girsa over here. In the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, where the Gemara brings this whole, story over there in the context of a sugya about getting healed by a goy. The Gemara discusses over there the concern. Back then, there was a concern that if you go to a goy for a remedy, the goy may deliberately give you something that'll be poisonous or otherwise harmful. So therefore, you shouldn't do it. And the Gemara discusses over there how Rabbi Yochanan could go to this goyish lady to get the cure. Here, Rashi says here, in connection with Hilchos Shabbos, it's not really relevant. Nevertheless, we have the Girsa in front of us, Hechi Ovid Hochi, and according to that, the question would be how he could put the medicine on Shabbos, because on the face of it, Safdina is not such a dangerous disease that you should be allowed to be over, even on the Din de Rabbanon, to use medicine on Shabbos, let alone if we mean that he was actually doing things d'oraisa, for example, grinding up the olive pits or whatever it is. So how could he do that? And the answer is Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok, Shaini Tzafdina. Tzafdina is different. It may seem at the beginning to not be particularly dangerous, but it starts out only in the mouth, but eventually, if it's not treated, it spreads to the intestines, and it can be very dangerous. And the Gemara actually there in Avodah Zarah establishes a rule that the general rule is any makashol cholol, any kind of disease or injury or whatever that affects the internal organs of the body is something that you can be machal Shabbos for. So here, this is an example of that even though it seems to just be some kind of gum disease, but eventually it spreads. Again, if it means scurvy, then the taka does end up affecting the whole body, because the whole body breaks down because of a lack of vitamin C. If it means some other kind of infection or whatever, then yeah, eventually such things tend to spread as well. Okay. Further on, the Gemara talks about, again, we're talking about various dinim of Pikuach Nefesh as they relate to Shabbos. The original thing was as far as Yom Kippur, but now we have a more general discussion about being Machal Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh. So, Tanan Abonon, Metzachin Pikuach Nefesh b'Shabbos. We do things, we work towards to do things of Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos. Rashi, by the way, translates, where do we get the word Pikuach from? Rashi uses a French word over here to translate that means to uncover. So to discover or uncover. So the discoverment, you see. So it's related to the word discover or the word uncover in English. So literally, pikuach nefesh means uncovering what's needed in order to save a person's life. Sometimes it can literally be uncovering. Like, for example, it talks about, we're going to talk about soon, a piece that the Gemara discusses when a building collapses and you partially have to dig up the rubble in order to find people who are trapped underneath it. Sometimes it can be other kinds of situations. You have to figure out, you have to discover what it is that the person is, that's putting the person in danger, and figure out how to treat him or how to save him. So therefore, so the word for that becomes pikuach nefesh, which literally means discovering how to save his life. Anyway, so mefakhin pikuach nefesh for Shabbos, so you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. In fact, not only you're allowed to, but hazoris harezim eshuvach, whoever's quicker to do it is more praiseworthy. The ain sorach little reshus mi beistin, he doesn't need to get permission from beistin before he acts. You know, it's a matter of pikuach nefesh, you just go and do it. by the time you come, it might be. In fact, the Yerushalmi brings on this, and this is brought the halacha, hanishal hareza meguna. If a rav is asked such a question, then it's a gnai, it's a shameful thing for such a rav to even be asked such a question. Why? Because he should be teaching his balabatim to begin with that about the importance of pikuach nefesh docha Shabbos and most things in kol haTorah kula, and therefore there shouldn't even be a situation where in an emergency they need to ask from a shayla. So her case, what are some examples of that? Raw tinik shenafalayam. Suppose a person sees that a child fell into the sea or into a lake or whatever, puris mitsuda or ma'alehu, then he spreads out a net and brings up the child. Ba'azoriz harez meshubach. Again, whoever is quicker to do that is praiseworthy. Ve'ein sarach lutol rishos mibeistin. He doesn't need to check first with beistin. And the Gemara points out that means ba'afal gabri kotsayid kavri. Now, even if at the same time he's putting a net into the water, he ends up catching fish. Nevertheless, we don't say he was doing a malacha of tzeda, therefore he shouldn't have done that. No, we say it doesn't matter. Now, there is a machloikas we've shown him about that. What about if he intends to catch fish? What about if he's actually intending to catch fish and then he pulls up the child together with them? So you have a machloikas we've shown him on that. Would he be, he went machatchila for the fish. Because he wanted to be over Shabbos, and then in the end, it turned out, so you have a few different scenarios. You can have where he's going to get the kid, and by accident, he catches some fish as well. You can have where he intends to do both. He figures, you know what, as long as I'm catching the kid, I may as well catch some fish as well. And you can even have a case where he intends to catch fish, and he pulls up a child together with it, not even realizing that there was a child there. As far as the first two cases, there's no question, he's allowed to do it. As far as the middle case, it's Machlokas Rishonim, whether he's still chayav for breaking Shabbos. The fact is that the fact is, you know, he did do a malacha. On the other hand, we're saying he was also intending to save the child. So does he have the right to do that? Does he have a right to, while he's pulling up the child, to think, you know what, I'm going to catch some fish as well? Or should he not do that? Well, it depends. We're talking about at the same time. Obviously, if after he pulled out the child, he goes and pulls out the fish. There's no excuse for that. But the Rambam actually goes so far as to say, even if he was intending to go catch fish and he happened to pull up a kid, nevertheless, he'd still be potter, even though his intention, machatchila, was to actually do a malacha, but because he ended up saving a kid, then therefore he's potter. But not machatchila, he'd be allowed to do that. So it's machlokas we're showing him about that point. The Gemara mentions soon that in one of the cases, the Gemara uses the word michavim, that he has intention to. So there are different gersos, whether you have that word in there or not, that will make a difference. In other words, if he's intending, for example, to catch fish, but he's also intending to save the child, would that be something that he's allowed to do? Or would we tell him that, no, you can only have in mind the kid, and if by accident you end up catching fish, then fine, doesn't matter. So it's Macholikas we're showing him about that between the Ran and the Rif, among others. Next. Ra tinik shenafel labur. Suppose he sees a child falls into a pit. Oikir chuya umalehu. That he can uproot a clod of dirt from the edge of the edge of the burr. In other words, a burr usually there's a rim around the burr. So like this now, what you're doing is you want to make it easier to climb down into the burr and rescue the kid. So you pull up, you dig up and take out some of the dirt around the edge of the burr. So you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. And again, the one who does that the faster is praiseworthy. The insorach little rishus mibeistin, he doesn't have to act based on rishus. But I forgot them to come a second dagger, even if at the same time he's now also making a step. Where now in the future, after Shabbos, it'll be easier to get in and out of the burr because of this change that he made to the lip of it. Nevertheless, he's doing it on Shabbos to save a kid, so therefore he's allowed to do that. And again, you have a point to somebody showing him, even if he's actually intending to make that step, but he's also at the same time saving the child, then it would be mutter as well, according to somebody showing him.
It's a nefesh.
The point is, you have the Rishonim who learn that if he's intending to be Masakin Darga, then maybe he shouldn't do it. Maybe somebody, or at least we would say, B'dievet, fine, he did it. Obviously, he saved a life. Maybe we should tell him to begin with, don't be having in mind to make a step over there. You're pulling out the dirt in order to make it easier to get down in there and get the kid. Don't start thinking, you know what, by the way, I'm going to make a nice step out of it while I'm at it. So some Rishonim learn that way, others learn that not. A third example, Ra Delas Shenina Lo B'Fnei Tinek, if he sees that a door is locked in front of a child, Shovro O Metziyo, then he can break down the door and get the kid out. By the way, Rashi is one of the ones who says Shafilu hu tzarech l'dover. Rashi says even if he needs this thing, even if he needs the actual fish, or even if he needs the actual step into the boat or whatever, he would be entitled to do that. And again, there are Rishonim who don't learn like that. Anyways, Rosh Ninel of Jalas Bifnei Tinek, if he sees a door locked in front of a child, Shoivro Mitzia, he can break the door and get the kid out. Again, the one who does it fastest is praiseworthy. He doesn't need permission from Beis Din. And the Gemara interjects. That means, even if we're talking about that he's intending to break the wood, to break the door into useful pieces of wood. Rashi has two explanations. One is that shifi means boards, which then in the future we can use them for some other project after Shabbos. The second possibility is it means little splinters of wood that he can use for making a fire. So if we have the girsa michavin, then it means even if he's having that specifically in mind, he's still allowed to do that. According to the Rishonim, who don't have the girsa michavin, it would mean even though he ends up breaking it in a way that becomes something useful after Shabbos, then it's allowed, but not that he should have that in mind. And a fourth example, mechaber mafsikin this mitnah blake of a Shabbos. You can if there's a fire on Shabbos. And there's danger to life over there. So when there's no danger, we learned back in the Sefer Shabbos, you have to just let the fire burn itself out, even if it means the entire house and everything in it is going to burn down. But when there's pekuach nefesh involved, then when there's people who can't be evacuated from the house, or it may spread to other houses where the people there can't be gotten out or whatever, then we're saying over here, you're allowed to put out the fire on Shabbos. Halacha l'maisa is that if your house, say for example, you have a house which is not attached to any other, and a fire breaks out in it on Shabbos, and you can get everybody out of the house, then yes, you have no heter to put the fire out on Shabbos. You've got $1 million in there, okay, b'chol moedecha, like we learned the other day. But if, for example, if you have someone in the house where you can't easily get out, or your house is adjacent to other houses and it's been spread to them or whatever, then yes, we're talking about over here. Then it's a matter of pekuach nefesh, so then you can put it out or call the fire department or whatever it is. Incidentally, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions an interesting point. Back in the day, where when there was a fire, goyim could use it as an excuse to loot. I don't know, to a certain extent, maybe that applied nowadays also. I don't know. Then you have a heter to put out a fire, even if there's no specific sakonas nefoshes, because goyim are going to use it as an excuse to break into the area and start looting, and that can also cause danger to life when people are going to try to stand up against them. So then it mentions in Shulchan Aruch there would be a heter to put out the fire in that case as well. Anyway. The point is, so when you're allowed to, so machabin, you're allowed to put out the fire, or mafsikin, or you're allowed to set up a firewall. For example, Rashi says using metal kalim or earthenware kalim full of water or whatever to make a firewall to prevent the fire from spreading. B'Shabbos mitnav leka because of a fire. B'Shabbos, and the point is, even though the water is going to pour out of the kalim and put out the fire again, because it's a matter of sakonas nefashos. Ba'azori zareiz meshubach, again, the one who does that faster is praiseworthy. Vein sarach lito rishus mi'beis din, he doesn't need to take direct permission from beis din. And again, the Gemara interjects. Even if he's doing it in a way where he ends up flattening out the coals, and now after Shabbos he can more easily use those coals to bake or cook something on, you know, to put a pot on, for example, nevertheless it would still be allowed. Again, subject to the Machlokas Rishonim, is he allowed even Machatchila to do it in such a way, or is it only a B'dievedik thing that if he did it that way? And the Gemara goes on, it's not here in Ein Yaakov, but the Gemara goes on to discuss why it needs to mention four different cases. One interesting one the Gemara mentions is if the kid is behind a locked door, you might think that maybe what you can do, the Gemara says is, so you stay on the other, you don't break down the door on Shabbos, maybe what you do is you stay on the other side of the door until you can find the key, or until after Shabbos, or whatever it is, and you amuse the kid from the other side of the door, you play with nuts, as the Gemara says, or you do other things to keep the kid distracted. We don't say that, we say go break down the door. Because the Tinek might be so scared that he might die from fright, Rechman Al-Fanya. Further on, the Gemara talks about the dinim, about what happens if a building collapses on Shabbos, and that you have to, or on Yom Kippur, or any other, whatever, so again, you have to go dig through the rubble, and be mechallel Shabbos, and do whatever you can in order to save people's lives who are buried there. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, ad heichan hu boded, up to what point, when you find a person buried there in the rubble, how far do you have to check on his body to see whether he's alive? Meaning, Rashi says, if you find a person who's been knocked out, he's in a coma or whatever, you can't tell whether he's alive or dead, where do you check to see whether he's in fact alive or dead? So ad choitmoy, you check until his nose. If you don't detect any breath coming from his nose, then you know that he's dead. Some say you check until his heart to see if he has a heart. Continues the Braisa. What happens if you're digging through and checking, searching for bodies, and you find the people up in the high, in the upper levels of the rubble are dead? You shouldn't say at that point, you know what, the ones who are further down in the rubble are for sure dead. I may as well not bother anymore. Or if it's on Shabbos, I'm not allowed to bother anymore. Nope. In fact, it's happened. It sometimes happened that people in the higher levels were dead, and the ones who were buried further down were alive. So you have to keep on looking until, as long as you have reason to think anybody's alive in there. In principle, by the way, the Mishnah and the Gemara discuss there's a difference whether there are Jews or Goyim trapped in there. In practice, you don't always have that distinction nowadays because there's a whole matter of Eva. If you're going to go and do pikuach nefesh only for Jews and not for goyim in such a situation, it'll cause an enormous amount of anti-Semitism. So therefore, poskim are generally generally say that you should go ahead and under the circumstances and do it for them as well. There are cases where goyim call atzala, yeah, and Rav Moshe Feinstein and other poskim have talked about such cases, yeah. One thing is, the Gemara mentions in Masechta Avodah Zarah, you have, for example, let's say, when it comes to, it talks about the dinim over there of a midwife going to help a woman in labor, where the Gemara says over there, we're able to give an excuse to the goyim that say, we're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos only for people who keep Shabbos, but since you don't keep Shabbos, then we don't have a heter for that. But again, Rav Moshe and other Gdolis who all talk about nowadays, nobody's going to accept such an idea, and it'll cause tremendous Eva, so therefore, yeah. Okay. All more so now with social media and all that. It's true, yeah. Yeah, it's true. There was a couple of decades ago, there was a Yid who put out all kinds of, unfortunately, he was one of the Maharsayich Machribayich. He put out books and articles and whatever, claiming all kinds of false things against Jews. And one of them he claimed was that one time there was a case of Pikuach Nefesh where they deliberately said, no, leave the goy alone and let him die. And then they actually demonstrated, and he was finally forced to admit that he had made up the whole story. So yeah. So the Gemara says, now, we just said there's machloikas, where you check on the body to see if the person is alive. We said, do you check for breath from the nose, or do you check for a heart? So the Gemara says, lema hani tanoi ki hani tanoi. Should we have to say that the machloikas tanoim of the Tana Rabbanan versus the Tanakama versus the Yesh Omrim is the same as the following machloikas tanoim? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Mehechan Havlad Noitzer. From what part of the body does a baby first start getting formed? A baby develops in the womb, what part of the body develops first? So Meiroshoi, so the Tanakama of that Braisa says, the head develops first. Shanema, as the Pasuk says, Mim Eimi Ata Goizi, David says about Hashem, you Hashem, goizi me from my mother's womb. Now, in the simple sense, goizi means you pulled me out, and that's how the Mephoshim and the Pasuk explain it. However, the Gemara over here is dashing, but oimer gozi nizrich ashlichi, we find another Pasuk that uses almost the same word, gozi. The Navi tells the Jewish people, cut off your crown of hair and throw it away. In other words, show that you're praving avelos for the golos and the churban. So therefore, we see the word gozi is related to hair on the head. So we understand. Gozi means you Hashem in my mother's womb. You first created my head. So the Tanakhama says that that's the head is what's created first. Abishol says that no, the navel, the middle of the body, is created first. And then it sends out roots in all directions, and then the rest of the body develops from that. The point is, the Gemara is assuming the Tanakama of the previous Braisa, who says that person's main chayos is in his breath from his nose. So he would say, therefore, the main chayos of a baby forming in the womb must be the head, which contains the nose first. That's true, the baby doesn't breathe in the womb, but nevertheless, the point is that Tana would be saying that the head is the seat of the main chayus of the body. Whereas the Yesh Omen that said that you check for a heartbeat would follow Abishol, who says that the baby is formed from its midsection. Tibura literally means its navel, but it means that general, the midsection of the body. So is it the same machlokes? The Gemara says not necessarily. Afilu tema abashol. You could even say that the Tanakama of the previous Braisa would be like abashol. Ad kama ka'omer abashol hasm elol inyan yitzira. You know, abashol is only talking about when the baby is formed inside the womb. And then he says first the middle of it. The kol midi memtsiyase mitzar. In general, whenever you have something formed, you start from the middle and then you work your way outward. We had earlier in the Masechta, we had something about that when the Gemara was discussing how the world was formed, and we had a couple of different opinions over there. One is that Hashem formed the middle of the world first, Olamem Tse'ise Nivra, that Hashem first created the middle of the world, and then worked outward from there. So in general, when you create something, you're usually going to start from the middle and then work your way outward. So therefore, Abishol says, so it is also with the body inside the womb. But when it comes to figuring out whether a person is alive or not and saving his life, even Abishol would agree that the main place of life in the body is in the nose, because the pasuk described by the mabul, anything that had the breath of life in its nostrils was killed in the mabul. So we see that the nishmas ruach chaim, how you define whether a creature is alive or not, is by whether it has breath, whether it's still breathing. So amar papa machloikas mi matzal amayla, the whole machloikas, even the opinion that says ad libay would only be talking about if you're going from the bottom to up. So let's say, for example, you found first the feet of somebody buried under the rubble, and then you're working your way up the body to see whether he's alive or not. And eventually you reach his heart. So then the Tanakama says that's not enough. Don't even bother checking for a heartbeat. The important thing is to check the nose. Whereas the Yeshayim will say check the heart, and if you don't find the heartbeat, then you know the guy's dead. But, says your papa, if you find his head first, then everybody would agree, once you've gotten to the nose, and you don't find that he's breathing, then you don't need to check any further. As the Pasuk we just quoted about the Mabul, any creature that has the breath of life in its nostrils. So even the Yeshayim would agree to that. The Yeshayim are only saying, if you found the heart first, then is it enough to see that it doesn't have a heart? Now it comes out, it comes out that the main criteria in halacha of whether a person is alive or dead is whether they're breathing. Nowadays, you have the enormous discussion about brain death and all of that, which bears on this. In Goyish Halua, Lahavdil, they often consider that brain death is enough, that at that point the person's considered dead legally, and therefore they can harvest their organs and whatnot. Here we're saying that in halacha, it depends on whether they've stopped breathing, and so there's an enormous amount of discussion about that. There's also a lot of discussion. What about there might be, you can't tell there's a heartbeat, but you hook up an EKG machine or whatever, and you'll still detect a heartbeat. Is that enough to still consider then that the person is alive? Or maybe at that point, since you can't detect a heartbeat anymore, maybe then the person is not considered alive anymore. There's a couple of tshuvas from Ramosha on the subject. There's a lot from the Tzitz Eliezer on the subject. There's a lot of postgame of the last 50 or 70 years have dealt with various angles on all of this.
Doesn't this
Machloket
seem to be like similar to the
Egla Rufa
where they measure on the body?
So the Gemara in Soita mentions about when it says by the Egla Rufa where they, what part of the body they measure from to find the closest city. Yeah, the Gemara mentions the same Machloket about what point a baby is formed from. And again, the Gemara says there maybe not necessarily does that relate to that Machloket because then they're learning from what it says by the Pesukim, by the Egla Rufa, where it says Cholol, where do we consider that the person, where do we consider that the cessation of life comes from? Where is he considered a Cholol, depending on his head or his heart or whatever. Now, so let's get into the general discussion where we know the whole concept that pikuach nefesh doich kol haTorah kula. So the Gemara says, "Kvar hoyu Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbi Akiva v'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah mahalchin baderech." These three chachamim were one time walking on the road. The Levi hasader v'Rabbi Shmuel b'noish Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah mahalchin achareihem. You had to, behind them were walking Levi Hasader and Rabbi Shmuel the son of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Why is Levi Hasader called that? Rashi says, I don't know. Eitz Yosef brings an explanation from the Oruch that says that one explanation is it's not Hasadur, first a Dalad, then a Resh, but rather Hasarud, which means that he was making, so now the word Srud can either mean big day, like you have big day Srud, the clothes of the Kohenim that we talked about earlier in the Masechta, in which case it would mean that he made official uniforms, or it could mean that the word set, the word big day surad, Rashi explains on Chumash, can also mean clothing that's made like network, that's made of a loose weave. So it would mean he's making things, for example, like nets or things like that. So that's another explanation of why he's called Levi Hasadr. Another explanation that's brought is maybe it does mean Hasadr, like we have it over here, Moshen Seder, because he was an expert at arranging brises. Whatever the case, so he and Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, are walking behind the elder Chacham. Either Rashi didn't like these, explanations, or he didn't know of them. He just said, Loi Porash Limahu, it wasn't explained to me why he was called Levi Hasadr. We do find here and there that Rashi does quote the Aruch, but so maybe over here, yeah, maybe he didn't like the Aruch's explanation because maybe he figured, look, you know, that requires switching around the Resh and the Dalet, and he didn't, I don't know. Anyway, so, Nishala Shela Zulefneim, the following question was asked, these Chachamim, Minayim Pekuach Nefesh Shadeichas HaShabbos. How do we know this concept of Pekuach Nefesh is Deichas Shabbos and most other mitzvahs in the Torah? So the first one to speak was Rabbi Shmuel. He said, consider the case like this in the Pasuk. Im b'machteres yimotzei haganav. The Pasuk says in Parashas Mishpatim, if you find a ganav in a tunnel where he's trying to break into a house, the hook of a mess, and he strike him and kill him, then the Pasuk says, ein lo domim, then the balabas is not guilty of killing him because the guy is considered a roid. So Rabbi Shmuel says, umazesh sofak al momen ba sofak al nefashis ba. Now consider this Baba Machteres. He's not necessarily coming to kill. He may only be coming in order to steal momen. And if you stand up against him, he will run away. And we know how serious Shvichus Damim is, or Shvichus Damim Metameh Sa'aretz Vigorim Lashkinesh Shistalak Misrael. And yet, killing, and we know how serious killing a Yid is. It causes Eretz Yisrael to become Tomei, and it causes the Shekhinah to leave the Jewish people, as it talks about in Parshas Maaseh. Nevertheless, Nita Matzila Menafshei. Nevertheless, you're allowed to save the Balabas from this attacker, from this Ganav, even by killing him if necessary. Or Latzila can also mean, for that matter, to save the Ganav from the potential Aveda that he's going to do. Anyway, Kavachomer, so Rabbi Shmuel says, a Kavachomer of Kuach Nefesh should Deicha Shabbos. How much more so Kuach Nefesh would be Deicha Shabbos? Because if it's Deicha Ritzicha, which is a much more serious Isser, how much more so it's Deicha Shabbos? Then Rabbi Akiva Vomer, then Rabbi Akiva started speaking, and he said, you have another pasuk from Parshas Mishpatim. The pasuk describes if a person deliberately goes and stands up against somebody else and kills him. So the pasuk is, Mi'im mizbechita kochenu lomus. You take him even from the mizbeach to kill him. Which means that even, for example, like you find in Malachim, where Yoav grabbed onto the corners of the Mizbeach to save himself, nevertheless, the Ritzeach b'meizid, it doesn't save him, and you take him from there and execute him. Now, we learn me'im mizbechi, it only means when he's next to the Mizbeach, like holding on to the horns, like Yoav did, v'loy me'al mizbechi, not when he's on the Mizbeach, meaning, in other words, so Rashi says, it means also a Kohen. If a Kohen killed somebody and he has not yet started to do the Avodah, he's in the Azorah, but he hasn't yet started to do the Avodah, then we take him from there and we bring him to Beis Din to have him executed. But if he already began an Avodah, we don't interrupt it. We let him finish the Avodah, and then we bring him to Beis Din. Now that exception that you don't take him from in the middle of the Avodah, that would only apply when it's coming to execute. But if you want to take him away from the Avodah to help save somebody's life, meaning you have at the same time, while this Koyan is doing the Avodah on the Mizbeach, somebody else is being judged and based in for something which he would be Chayav Misa for, and they find out that this Koyan knows Eidos that could save the guy, so then they actually make him interrupt his avodah in order to come to Beis Din to testify. So after the me'al mizbechi, then we take him even from on the mizbeach, we go over to this kohen and we tell him, please interrupt your avodah because we need you right away in Beis Din to go testify on this guy's behalf. So now Rabbi Akiva says, umazen, now consider a kavachomer. In that case, shesofik yesh mamash midvorav, sofik ein mamash midvorav. It's a sofik whether what he's going to say is even going to amount to anything. He's going to come to say something to Beis Din. Is it going to be something that's actually going to get the guy exonerated? Maybe, maybe not. Beis Din has to hear him out. Va'avoida chamura doicha Shabbos. And avoida is such a serious thing that we see that doicha Shabbos. You do the avoida in the Bais Mikdash, even on Shabbos, even though it involves many malachas. Chavachoymel, pekuach nefesh, doicha Shabbos. So if we see, says Rabbi Akiva, that pekuach nefesh is doicha Shabbos, there's doicha avoida, how much more so it's doicha Shabbos?
The coin is the aid?
The coin is the aid in that case, yeah. Then Rabbi Lozav Amar, Rabbi Lozav and Azariah spoke up and said, here is another proof. Umam Mila Shu Elchad Men Amache Varem Shav Adam. Consider Mila, which involves only one of a person's 248 parts, Deuches Shabbos, and yet you do the Mila on Shabbos. Tavachoyim Avachol Gufo Yishad Deuches Shabbos. How much more so when it comes to saving a person's entire guf? Because now, why is Mila Deucha Shabbos? Rashi points out, because after all, it involves Kores. If a person doesn't have Bris Mila, eventually he's going to get Kores for it. And so we see that even Mila is Deucha Shabbos, how much more so saving the whole person's body. Rabbi Nachmanel actually has an interesting explanation of this, which ties in with something in this week's parasha. We know we have in this week's parasha, we have a story where Moshe and his family are on the way to Mitzrayim for him to start the job of talking to Paray, and on the way they're staying over in an inn, right? By Derech Mamola, by Yisheu Hashem, by Bakash HaMisoy, and Hashem was ready. Hashem sent a malach who attacked him and was ready to kill him until Tzipora made a bris for the baby. So we usually understand that it means that the malach was attacking Moshe Rabbeinu. That's how Rashi learns it on the pasuk. However, there are Mephoshim who learn that it means the malach was going to attack the baby. And only once Tzipora made a bris for the baby, then the malach left him alone. So in that case, Rabbeinu Chananel says, that's what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah means over here. Mila puts the baby in danger, because it could end up like the situation with Moshe. And we're saying, it's Deucha Shabbos, how much more so to save the person's entire life is Deucha Shabbos. Next. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, here's another way of learning. The pasuk says, "Es Shabbos Tishmoru." The pasuk says, "You should keep my Shabbos." Yochol Lakol. You would think that means across the board. You always have to keep Shabbos no matter what. Talmud Lema Ach. The note, because the pasuk says, "Ach Es Shabbos Tishmoru." The word "Ach" Cholak divides things and means there's exceptions to the rule. And the exception is Pekorach Nefesh. Rashi on the Pasuk, by then, Rashi actually on a Gemara in Psachim, where it also mentions Ach, in connection with Ach by Yom HaRishon, Rashi mentions over there, there's a system, one of the systems of exchanging letters for another that we find, the same way as you have Achbash, and you have other ones. One of the ones is called Achas Batah, where you divide the Aleph Beis into groups of seven letters each, and when you do like that, you come out, Aleph interchanges with Ches, and Chof interchanges with Tzadik, and therefore the word Ach becomes the word Chetz, Ches Tzadik, as in the word Chatzi, a half. So there we learn from that it means that only half the day is all on Erev Pesach is also to eat chametz. So the same way over here, only half, like a certain fraction of the time, do you have to keep Shabbos, and the other half, the other fraction, is your Mechalal Shabbos when there's Pekorach Nefesh.
Based on pronunciation?
Not based on pronunciation, it's based on dividing the Aleph Beis into three groups of seven letters each, the same way as Atbash.
How do they do it? How do they...
What do you mean, how do they do it? Exactly that. You take, for example, the Aleph, the Ches, and the Samach are all in one row. The Beis, Tes, and Ayin are all in one row, etc. It's a way of interchanging letters, like Atbash and like some of the others. Okay, another one, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yonasan, then Yosef Omer. The Pasuk says, Ki Kodesh Hi Lochem. The Pasuk says, Shabbos is holy to you. That means Lochem means for you. It's for your use. Meaning, Hi Mesurah Hi Biyedchem. The Shabbos is given over to you. The Shabbos is, so to speak, secondary to you. V'loy Atem Mesurah Miyada. You are not given over to Shabbos. In other words, that when there's Pekorach Nefesh involved, then your life overrides Shabbos. Rav Shimon Menasio, another one, the pasuk is v'shomru bnei Yisrael Shabbos. The Jewish people should observe Shabbos. That means Omra Torah, the Torah is telling us, chakalal over all of Shabbos achas, kidei sheyishmer Shabbos is harbi. Violate one Shabbos for his sake, so that in the future he'll be able to keep many more Shabbos. Now, a couple of Mephoshim point out one interesting nachdimina between what Rav Shimon Menasseh is saying and all the previous explanations. According to him, there would not be a heter to be Mechal Shabbos where the person is going to die shortly afterwards anyway. So it's only you're doing it in order to enable him to keep a future Shabbos, but if he's anyway not going to be enabled to keep a future Shabbos, then Rav Shimon Menasseh's reason wouldn't allow it. The halacha is not like that, though. The halacha is that we base ourselves on any of the various other reasons the Gemara is mentioning over here, and therefore the Gemara explains even for Chaye Shah, even the guy's only going to live for a short amount of time afterwards, nevertheless, you're Mechal Shabbos, friends. And the Gemara points out, Amr of Yehuda Mishmul, I havoi hosim, if I had been there when these Tanoim were discussing this, have amina didi adifa mididhu, I would have told them, I have a better limud, better than all of theirs. The Pasuk says, v'chai b'hem, that Hashem gave us the mitzvahs, that we should live with them, meaning we should live with l'shiyamos b'hem, not that we should die through them. So therefore, that includes Shabbos. So, okay, so we'll continue next time, as the Shem, and discuss the... I don't think we're going to have time, but we'll leave it till next time, yes. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Gimel Tavis. We have the concept that the Altadeva brings in Torah Ur, that Shemana Esrei nowadays. We daven it quietly, but that's only nowadays because Nukva, the Nekeva, which is represented by Shemana Esrei, which is where the person is davening, is only a Makabel, not a Mashpia. Well, also Lava, the Nukva will be raised up and itself become a Mashpia, just like the Makabel. So then Shemana Esrei will be loud, and then you'll have what it describes in the Pasuk Kol Kala. The Altadeva mentions this in Parshas Vayigash. So on the face of it, the Rebbe said, Tzorachiyun, according to Pnimius HaTorah, the point of Tfilah Balachash is because of the that's the definition of tefillah, because the bittul the mitzvahs to Hashem. So, and that's the true meaning of what Shemana Esrei is, connected to the mitzvahs. So how could it be that Lasid Lover it's going to be out loud, which is the opposite of bittul? So now the next part is actually the next day's installment, but since we don't have the shiur tomorrow, so we'll finish up. The answer is that Eber says, because La'asid Lover, when we're going to have the ultimate level of bittul to the point of a nigla kvod avayv or kabasa yachdav, that the flesh itself will seal the course. That means the whole mitzius will have revealed in it that enoid, there is no mitzius. By us, there's going to be revealed the concept of Yisrael, the kutchabricha kolachad. That means our own mitzius is going to be atzmus. Like we have even now, we have the concept man malchi rabbanon, that the mitzius of Talmud HaChachamim themselves is the king. So now we're going to be able to have the bittul, the tachlos of tefillah, and then we're going to have that advantage of bittul is going to be revealed, and we're going to be able to daven out loud, and that will demonstrate the highest level of bittul. Halachas of kiddush, the cup for kid yesterday, we talked about the details of the wine. The cup itself has to be whole, not cracked. It has to be clean. You have various dinim that apply to the kosher bracha of Birkas HaMazon. It has to be not cracked. It has to be clean, washed on the inside and outside, full, etc. All of those apply to Kiddush as well, both by day and by night, as well as Abdullah. It's good to make Kiddush by night on a big cup where you'll leave some of the wine over for day Kiddush and for Abdullah. I don't know anybody who does that, but there is that concept. Okay.